Translation. While walking among the Gandharvas, Yakshas, Asuras, Siddhas, Charanas, and denizens of the heaven, Lakshmi Devi, the goddess of fortune, was scrutinizingly examining them, but she could not find anyone naturally endowed with all good qualities. None of them was devoid of faults, and therefore she could not take shelter of any of them. Purport. The goddess of fortune, or as you, how do you say it in England? Fortune? The goddess of fortune? We say fortune. Same thing. The goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi, having been generated from the ocean of milk, was the daughter of the ocean. Thus, she was allowed to select her own husband in a Swayamvara ceremony. She examined every one of the candidates, but she could not find anyone suitably qualified to be her shelter. In other words, Narayana, the natural husband of Lakshmi, cannot be superseded by anyone in the material world. So I'll read text 20 because it's similar to this last text. I'll just read the Sanskrit. Nunam tapo yasya namanyu nirjayo jnanam kuchittach chanasangavarjitam kashin mahangstasya nakama nirjaya sa ishara kim parato vyapashaya. Translation. The goddess of fortune, examining the assembly, thought in this way: someone who has undergone great austerity has not yet conquered anger. Someone possesses knowledge, but he has not conquered material desires. Someone is a very great personality, but he cannot conquer lusty desires. Even a great personality depends on someone else. How then can he be the supreme controller? Purport. Here is an attempt to find the supreme controller, or Ishvara. Everyone may be accepted as an Ishvara, or controller. But still, such controllers are controlled by others. For example, one may have undergone severe austerities, but still be under the control of anger. By a scrutinizing analysis, we find that everyone is controlled by something else. No one, therefore, can be the true controller but the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Just like the atheists say, I don't believe in God. They don't believe in a supreme controller, and they're controlled at every moment. So it's just a lack of, the Prabhupada would say, brain substance. Something's, as we say in America, the lights are on, but nobody's home. Something's missing upstairs. Hare Krishna. No one, therefore, can be the true controller but the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna. This is supported by the Shastras. Ishara Parama Krishna. The Supreme Controller is Krishna. Krishna is never controlled by anyone. It's not true. It's controlled by Radharani. But this is philosophy. You have two things. One is called rasa and one is called tattva. So what may be true in tattva may not be true in rasa. So in rasa, Krishna is controlled by Radharani. But in tattva, he's the supreme controller. You see the difference? Philosophically, God is the supreme controller. But in terms of relationships, he's controlled. So we say Radharani is actually the supreme controller. But in terms of tattva, she's not the creator. So Krishna's the supreme controller because he's the origin of everything. But as far as who controls Krishna, that's Radharani. Right? Sometimes Radharani has so much control over Krishna. And he loves that. And she gets mad at him. And then he has to beg her forgiveness. He likes that. So he's completely controlled by her. Once he had to dress up as a... She was so mad at him because he showed up late for a rendezvous. And then when Krishna came late, she had already left. And she was really mad. And he had to go to her house to beg that she give up her anger. So he dressed up as a Shaivite sannyasi and he went to her house begging charity. And so I think it was Jatila gave some rice and grains and ghee. He said, no, I need it from a chaste lady. So then Radharani came out and she offered it. And he said, no, I'm not begging for rice and grains. I'm begging for your anger because I want to take it away from you because I can't associate with you because you're angry. So she gave up her anger and she took the rice and the ghee and everything else and poured it on Krishna's head. So he was very happy. So he was controlled by Radharani's anger, but that anger was just... in rasa, that anger is just helping the relationship. So Krishna likes that. And Krishna is controlled by his devotees. Aham bhakta paradino hi ashvatanta iva dvija. Devotees are in my heart, I'm controlled by them, because everyone's controlled by love. And Krishna, that's all Krishna cares about. So he likes to be controlled, and he likes to serve his devotees. Actually, Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said, that we should understand that Krishna enjoys serving his devotees. So Krishna takes care of his devotees, and the devotee thinks, no, I don't want to engage Krishna in my service. That's the right attitude. But Krishna likes to serve the devotees because he's attracted. He's controlled by their love. Right? So, tattva and rasa. What's true in tattva may not be true in rasa. Rasa is relationship. And tattva is a philosophical truth. So, for the masses, we say Krishna is the supreme controller. But we know that Radharani controls Krishna. By his own will. Because he created her to control him. He likes to be controlled. Krishna is never controlled by anyone, for he is the controller of everyone. Sarva karana karanam. So, thank you for your glasses. The Lakshmi Devi, she, as it said in the purport previously, she's the natural husband. Excuse me, she's the natural wife of Narayan. So she's looking for Narayan, and so she has to look by qualification. So she's looking at all these different levels of devas and finding that they're all controlled by something, and therefore concluding if they're controlled by something, that means something's higher than them, then they can't be God. Because if something's above you, you're not God. So there's a nice set of shlokas in the Brihadnaradiya Purana that talk about humility and how difficult it is for sages to become humble. And so it goes through different stages. So that a person may come to the stage of desiring to be humble or wanting or not even wanting recognition, but when they get the recognition they enjoy it. So it's so you've come to this point and say, I don't want to be honored, but still when you're honored, oh, you feel very good. Oh, that was very nice. Because we're so much controlled by pride. And then it goes through different stages, and it ultimately comes to the stage where an ascetic or sadhu is totally renounced. There's no material attachment at all. So you think at that point, when you have no material attachment, at that point, you have no desire. There's no pride in your heart, you would think, right? Wouldn't you? You're completely renounced from the material world, and the material world is bound, we're bound by pride. So at that point you would think, Okay, this sadhu, he's completely renounced. He lacks, has no desire to be honored. And it's said in the Brihat Naradi Purana, even when he comes to that platform, he becomes proud of his renunciation. Just see how renounced I am. So, always controlled by something, even completely renounced. Now I have control of my anger. I have control of my senses. But still, then there's pride. Just see how well I control my anger. Just see how well I control my senses. Huh? So now we're controlled by pride. It's so subtle. So here in this verse, she's talking about three things. She's talking about anger. Everyone's controlled by anger. Everyone's controlled by material desire. And everyone's controlled by lust. So anger is very interesting if you look at it in a cultural context. In the Bhagavatam, Bhishmadev was arranged that Bhishmadev would instruct Yudhisthira Maharaj when Bhishmadev was in his last days. As we know, Bhishmadev had the benediction, he could die at will. So Krishna arranged that he could instruct Yudhisthira, who is now going to take the throne. So in one section of that instruction, he said there are 10 qualities for human beings. And one of the qualities of a human being, this is not qualities of sadhus, this is not qualities of devas, this is just qualities of human beings. And of course, human being by Vedic standard means you follow Vedic principles. So these are qualities for people who follow Vedic principles. When you're outside the Vedic principles, you're called a yavana. And when you're a meat eater, you're called a malecha. So you can remember that. Malecha starts with M. But if you're just outside the Vedic paradigm, even you don't eat meat, you're a yavana. You're not a malecha yet. So when you're outside varnashram, then you're called a yavana. So he's giving instruction for civilized human beings. What does Prabhupada say? Human civilization begins with varna and ashram. So he said one of the qualities of civilized human beings is not to become angry. He said another quality is to be forgiving. And so resentment is just permanent anger. Anger comes and goes, right? And when you hold on to it, that's called resentment. So he listed both things. He said that's not even the quality of a sadhu, that's just the quality of human beings. So what did Prabhupada say? At first become conscious, then become Krishna conscious. So we're trying to be Krishna conscious simultaneously. We're trying to become human beings. Isn't it? Do you ever notice? Sometimes we don't always act like human beings. So here he says becoming angry is not the quality of civilized human beings. Interesting, isn't it? Any of you ever become angry? Oh, let me rephrase that question. Any of you never become angry? It's very difficult to control. Kama esha, krodha esha, rajagun samudbhava. Why is anger detrimental? And why is Lakshmi saying, this person is angry, he cannot be God? Because anger, according to Bhagavad Gita, anger is influenced by the mode of ignorance. And lust is influenced by passion. So what is she really saying? These people are under the control of the modes of nature. So how can they be God? God controls the modes. And so when we're angry, we're under the control of tamagun. And when we're lusty, we're under the control of passion. So as devotees, our culture is a Brahminical culture. We actually have a culture. But Prabhupada said, everyone... Now, I might get in trouble for saying this. They may never invite me back again. Prabhupada said, everyone should spend a year in India to learn the culture. Have any of you spent a year in India? How many of you feel like you picked up some culture or understood that you didn't have culture? I think we all understand that, right? I was in Vrindavan in the late 90s. I was teaching there at the VIHE, and after the month, I was teaching a month-long class. After the class was finished, I wanted to buy a harmonium. So one of my students said, or one devotee said, I have a harmonium. So I was looking at the harmonium. And there was one elderly man who was also in the room at that time, and he was my student. And so I was negotiating the price. And then I walked out of the room, and he walked out the room with me. And he said, don't worry, I'll buy it for you. So at that time, Vrajabihari was there in charge of the Aichi and other, and the Gurukula, or Sistine. And I told him, and immediately he said, that is culture. That the student sees the teacher as guru, and the student just found that the teacher wanted something, and he facilitated. And then he said, that's what you learn by living in India. You learn culture. Respect. You learn respect. You learn how to respect elders, seniors. You learn how to show affection to juniors. So, in Krishna consciousness, we have a Brahminical culture. Even if you're not a Brahmin, even if you're not initiated, even if you don't even plan in the near future to be initiated or take Diksha, second initiation, we have a Brahminical culture. Even if you work on cars, say, Prabhu, I am not a Brahmin, I work on cars. So I don't have to develop Brahminical qualities. Is that a good argument? Would anyone accept that? Jayananda, did you celebrate Jayananda's appearance day here? Jayananda's appearance day was... You did? No? Yes, no? Yeah. So Jayananda, his service was... One of his services was... We had a few services. One was fixing cars. One was driving cars. One was taking out the trash. And then one was going inside dumpsters. You call them dumpsters? The big trash? The big metal, what, you know? Where you put all your trash, what do you call them? Skip. Skip? We call them dumpsters because you dump things. You should change the name so we can understand what you're talking about. Skip? What is that? You don't want to look at it? You skip by it or something? It smells bad? We call them dumpsters. So he would go to the Boga market and a lot of the produce was thrown in dumpsters. So he'd go in the dumpster before he'd buy. So, taking out the trash, fixing the cars, going in the dumpsters, driving cars. This was his service. Prabhupada said he was a pure devotee. Does it mean he was a mechanic, a car mechanic? Of course not. So, we are all cultivating the culture, Brahminical culture, and Brahminical culture is within the mode of goodness. So someone may say, well, is the mode of goodness the goal? And it's not the goal. But why do we cultivate goodness? Why is it important to cultivate goodness? Because goodness is closer to Krishna. Here, we're reading about anger. Anger is a mode of ignorance. So when we're angry, we're now in the third mode of material nature. We're three levels down from Krishna. Right? We're that much further away. So we have a Brahminical culture, which is based in activities predominantly of goodness and transcendence. Because when you cultivate a culture of goodness, then it's very easy to be Krishna conscious. So in a culture, what is a Brahminical culture? What do we find in our culture, in our Yavana culture? What do we pick up in our Yavana culture and bring with us when we moved into the ashram? A lot of nasty things, right? Didn't we? Our culture, the culture we bring in with us. It's quite nasty, isn't it? Somebody hurts you, what do? You say, no problem, Prabhu. You haven't done anything wrong. Is that the culture we learn? No. We don't learn that culture. That's not a Brahminical culture. In the Mahabharata, Draupadi was very angry. She was very angry at her husband, Yudhisthira. She was chastising him and said, you're foolish. I don't understand why you accepted the exile because you were cheated in gambling and you understand Dharma and they were adharmic. So why did you accept it? You don't have to accept it. You were cheated. He's very angry. And he said, we will not act on anger. If we act on anger, everything will be lost. Everything will be ruined. It is not our time now. But don't ever be motivated by anger. It will destroy everything. And then he spoke to her for quite some time. And then he ended this soliloquy by saying, if everyone retaliates hurt with hurt, we'll kill, the whole universe will be destroyed. We'll destroy one another. Of course, he's talking about kshatriyas. There has to be some higher consciousness, higher quality. Right? So, in Krishna consciousness, we come. And we come with a whole set of problems. And then devotees say, they raise their hand in class and say things like, what do I do when I'm always finding faults, or I'm always jealous, or I'm always envious? Right? This is very common. You get these kinds of questions, or you ask yourself this question. Why do we feel that way? That's not Brahminical culture. That's the culture because we're still imbibing in some way that other culture. And then you look at Prabhupada's letters and he tells you how to deal with one another. Srila Prabhupada, what do I do if somebody's doing something wrong? Prabhupada said, act in a way that sets an example. That's Brahminical culture. What do you think you're supposed to do when someone's doing something wrong? Go up to them with a hammer, knock them in the head and say, Prabhu, you're not supposed to do that. That's not Brahminical culture, is it? So Prabhupada said, you set the example and they'll see your nice example. That's Brahminical culture. What else is Brahminical culture? You see somebody doing something wrong and you get all disturbed and angry and frustrated and complain. Is that Brahminical culture? What culture is that? What culture does that come from? Do we see that in the Mahabharata? What do you see in the Mahabharata? It's all Dharma. If you understand Dharma, it's very interesting. And Dharma is not a very high level. Because Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. And then Prema, Pumartha, Mahan. Then Krishna consciousness is the fifth level. So Dharma is the first level. But what is Dharma? Dharma means you do the right thing because of the culture. You feel like doing this, but you do that. That's Dharma. And it's something which the Western mind has a very difficult time with. Just like in the Bhagavatam, Priyavrata did not want to marry, but it was necessary for him to become the king. And even Brahma had to come down to convince him to get married. And it's said in the Bhagavatam that something very interesting that illustrates Dharma. This is so powerful. It's said that he was the ideal husband, and he didn't even want to get married. Now, what woman in her right mind will marry a man who says, I really don't want to get married? No woman will do that. So why do I want to marry someone who doesn't want to be married? Or men, would you marry a woman if you wanted to get married? Would you marry a woman who said, well, I really don't want to be married? You wouldn't. But here it said he didn't want to be married. He refused the request of so many of his superiors until Lord Brahma came and said, you must do this. So he did it, and it said he was an ideal husband, and he had no interest in his wife and family. Isn't that interesting? How can you be ideal and have no interest and no attachment? It's a very interesting principle. Something that you don't see in a Western culture, in a Yavana culture. It was called Dharma. He did it because he was supposed to. He was the best husband any woman could ask for. Why? Because it was his duty to be a good husband. And he did it because of Dharma. He didn't do it because of how he felt. If he did it how he felt, he would have neglected his wife and family because he was detached. He had no interest in it, had no need for it. He would have just gone out in Sankirtan and maybe called them once a month. श्री श्री राधा गोकुलानंद की जय। Isn't that interesting? You could be an ideal husband and have no interest in being married. So what does it mean that he was ideal? He took that as his duty and he performed it perfectly. And it says there in the Bhagavatam, he performed it in such a way that his wife and children had no idea that he was that detached. He showed them affection. But what's our modern culture? I don't like you. So because I don't like you, forget Dharma. Dharma's out the window. It's all about what I like and how I feel. Right? Isn't it? That's Yavana culture. That's Yavana. How I feel is what's important. Well, what about duty? What about responsibility? What about acting on a higher principle? That doesn't matter. It's about what I feel. And right now I'm angry, so I'm going to yell at you. But culture is different. Culture is, what is the dharma of the relationship? So I may be angry, but what is the dharma of the relationship? If I am a junior and I'm angry with the superior, I don't go up and yell and scream at them. Because that's not culture. That's Yavana culture. Right now, I don't know about here, America is very advanced in Yavana culture. If your parents give you trouble, you can take them to court and sue them. Do you have that here in England? Not yet? Well, it's coming. Don't worry. If it starts in America, it's coming here. If you're, you know, your parents yelled at you and they caused you psychological, you feel, I'm psychologically damaged because my parents yelled at me. I'm taking them to court. I'm a nervous wreck. Oh, then the judge sues your parents and you get hundreds of thousands of dollars from your parents for emotionally damaging you. That's Yavana culture. Culture means it's guided by principles, dharmic principles. So human life is, human life, not even sadhu life. You don't become angry. That's human life. Isn't that interesting? So, what else do we learn? What else can we learn about culture? I was with Jayadwaita Swami. It was really funny. We were in Dubai, which I call Duibai, the two brothers, Chaitanya and Nitai. They have another name. They call it Damodar Desh. So we went to the home of one man, one family, to have lunch. And we were talking about the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. And in the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gop Kumar is elevating himself, and he finally gets back to Goloka and meets Krishna. And you've seen that B.G. Sharma painting where Krishna is embracing Gop Kumar. That's when they first meet. So that's the first meeting when Gop Kumar goes back home, back to Godhead. And Krishna said, I've been waiting for you. So I said it in my uncultured California way. I was, explaining the story, and I was explaining what happened, and I said, Krishna said, where you been? Why are you keeping me waiting here? And Maharaj said, no, Krishna doesn't say it like that. He said, that's our culture. We would say, where you been? I've been waiting for you, But even what's so important you're doing down there in the material world, you kept me waiting, No, and he said, in a cultured family, when they need to go somewhere and you're at their house and they need you to leave, they'll say something like, would you like to leave now? They won't say, I've got an appointment, it's 4:00, I have to go, get in the car. So they would say something like, is now a good time to go? Because that's culture. Because culture is all about respecting superiors. And Yavana culture is, hey, I gotta go, you're making me late, can you get in the car now? Isn't it? Well, maybe. Some degree of that, right? So I thought that was interesting. So because Maharaj spends a lot of time in India, and you learn these things in India, you learn about culture, about respect for superiors. So becoming angry, then it's contained within a whole, how do we say, comes with the whole package. What comes with anger? Well, there's fault-finding, there's envy, there's jealousy. So, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he saw that within the paradigm of Vaishnav culture. So he said, even if you see a fault, you shouldn't find fault. And we think, well, if I find a fault and there's not a fault, that's bad. But if I find a fault and there is a fault, it's okay. Right? Because after all, it's a fault. So what's the fault if I find a fault in a fault? Right? It's only a fault if I find a fault where there's no fault. I make up a fault. That's how we think, generally. And then when it gets worse with our uncultured attitude, we think, actually, the reason I'm finding the fault is because I'm smarter than everybody else, because they don't see. They don't see the problem. But because I'm smarter, I see the problem. And that's why I'm finding the fault, because I'm intelligent. Now you have double trouble. You shouldn't find the fault in the first place, and now you're thinking you're smarter, so that's why you find the fault. But so Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati explained to his disciples what is culture. And he said, culture is, you have no right to fault find even if there's a fault. That's culture. That's Vaishnava culture. If you're a manager, it's different. If you're a spiritual master, then it's your service to find fault. But in practical interaction, so that's Vaishnava culture. You don't even have a right to point it out. You don't even see it. And there's this amazing story that I love to tell to illustrate this point. And he was very, very concerned to teach this principle because fault finding has two problems. Number one, it's in the mode of ignorance, and when you do it against Vaishnavas, it becomes Vaishnava aparad, which is much worse than the mode of ignorance. Because the mode of ignorance just is a distance from Krishna, but aparad is a destruction of bhakti. So one time, there was a devotee living in the ashram, and this devotee was not chanting their rounds. They were not chanting 16 rounds. I don't know how many rounds they were chanting or if they were chanting any rounds, but it was reported to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. So, you imagine, someone living in the ashram is not chanting their rounds. This is a problem, right? Because to chant your rounds, you have to chant your rounds to live in the ashram. So it was brought to him, and he wanted to teach a principle. This devotee who brought this to his attention was very upset, and now he was focused on the fact that this devotee is not chanting his rounds. Has that ever happened to you, that someone has a fault and it kind of becomes like a magnet to your mind and you're meditating on their fault? That ever happened to anybody? Or am I the only one? I always knew I was weird. No, it happens to all of us, right? Sometimes we can become obsessed by another's fault. Right? That's why fault finding is dangerous. What are we supposed to be obsessed by? Krishna's lotus feet, destruction of guru. Not somebody's fault. Right? So, this came to Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, and he wanted to teach a very important principle. Don't be obsessed with another's fault, but appreciate the Vaishnavas. So he said, just see how great this devotee is. He's glorifying the devotee who's not chanting their rounds. Would any of you do that? You come to Shruti Dharma and say, Prabhu, so-and-so, Prabhu, is not chanting their rounds, and I just want to tell you how wonderful they are. They have so many good qualities. No. Say, this is serious. We cannot let him stay here. We have to talk to him. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, of course, that's a different principle. You have principles for living in the ashram. But he was teaching something else. He was teaching, even there's a fault, don't focus on it, but learn to appreciate the devotee. So he said, just see how great this devotee is. He's fully engaged. He said, is this devotee fully engaged? He said, yes, he's fully engaged. He said, just see how great he is. He's not even chanting one round, and he has so much bhakti overflowing out of his heart that he can be engaged fully in devotional service all day without even chanting one round. If I didn't chant my rounds, I would fall into Maya immediately. That was his response. Isn't that amazing? He's teaching a principle, a very important principle. Who would imagine glorifying a devotee who's not chanting their rounds. What was he teaching? He was teaching the principle, I am fallen. Right? When we are focused on the faults of another person, we are not thinking, I am fallen, because if we're thinking, I am fallen, we would never focus on the fault. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said in a lecture, he gave the reason why we find fault. Sometimes you may consider, you may ask yourself, why do I find fault? I don't even want to. Why do I? He said, because of my utter lack of humility. That's the reason. Not because I'm smart, not because someone has a fault. There's a joke, I don't know if you've ever seen this. We have a festival in America in New Vrindavan. It's called the Festival of Inspiration. And so there was a comedy routine. And in this comedy routine, one devotee was finding faults with another, saying something, you're this and you're that. And then the other devotee said, you're fault-finding. So he said, I'm not finding faults. You have so many faults and you're just displaying them in front of me. I don't have to find them. They're glaring in my face. I'm not fault-finding. So, he taught a very important principle that here is a devotee doing something which was against the rules of the mat. But Bhaktisiddhanta turns it around and finds fault in himself and glorifies this devotee and compares himself to this devotee saying, I am so fallen, if I didn't chant my rounds, I couldn't do that. That's the principle he's teaching. That's culture. We don't come from that culture, do we? We come from the culture. You turn on the radio. What are they talking? Politics. Right? And what are they talking? This guy's bad, that guy's bad. Right? That's the culture we come from. And that kind of talk is popular. Gramya katha, gossip. Right? So, when we're looking at these qualities, lust, anger, and what was the other one? Material desire. This is not culture. Prabhupada said, when he grew up, the culture was that men would not talk to women. That was the culture. I stayed at a man's home. He was about 55. I was in Bangalore in December. So I stayed at his home. We were talking. He said, my college class was the same students for 5 years, men and women. It was like one class. And he said, the men never talked to the women in 5 years. Same class. He said, that was the culture. And if they did, it was a scandal. That was the culture. Prabhupada said when he grew up, that was the culture. And then Prabhupada made a very important statement. He said, we were not allowed to talk to the women. He said, that was the culture. He said, but we wanted to, but we couldn't. Because of the culture. So that's the point of Dharma. There's a culture which restrains you. I like to find fault, but the Brahminical culture is to appreciate it. So we're constrained by the Dharma of culture. That's what's otherwise, it's all about feeling. Right? Isn't it? Well, I don't really love her anymore. But Prabhu, you have 3 kids that depend on you. I know, but I just don't feel it anymore. That's Yavana culture. I know, but she put on 20 kilos. You know, she was so cute when we got married, but I just don't feel it anymore. And that, you know, there's this woman at the temple is so beautiful. That's Yavana culture. And it happens all the time, right? What happened? I go back to temples. What happened to so-and-so? Well, he's divorced. And so this, the husband and wife switched. And, you know, that's Yavana culture. I was with a family in India. We were living with them periodically. We'd live with them for a week or so. Elderly, in their 70s. So I watched them interact. And traditional Indian families, the male figure is very domineering. Right? And the wife just goes along with it. That's the culture. I don't know if she likes it or not, but she goes along with it. So I was asking them about divorce because I was watching how the husband dealt with the wife and how the wife dealt with the husband. And she just took care of him. Whether he was in a good mood or a bad mood, whatever, she was just in a nice mood and just serving him. So I said, what about divorce? And she said, I think I said, do you guys get along? Because it doesn't look like it. She said, it doesn't matter. She said, it doesn't matter we get along. I said, what about divorce? She said, it doesn't matter. There's no question. That's Dharma. It's not about how you feel. Right? So, we have this culture of anger, resentment, fault finding. This is Yavana culture. Lust, greed, it's about how I feel. So it's important. We all should understand that when we're learning philosophy, it's within the context of a culture, and we should try to understand what that culture is, because the culture will prevent a lot of these lower mode activities and keep us in Sattva Gun. Like, for example, when we began book distribution, when book distribution really took off in America, we brought a lot of our Yavana culture into book distribution. And so we did a lot of things that really upset people that we shouldn't have done. And one time, Prabhupada said, I mean, a lot of devotees, they would distribute books and they weren't really preaching. They were just giving the books out and kind of wheeling and dealing to get money. And Prabhupada said, he said, that's a vaishya doing a brahminical activity. He said, if you're a Brahmin when you distribute books, you preach. But in the early days of book distribution, sometimes they'd say everything and anything except about Krishna. And that's how they distribute the book. And so Prabhupada said, that's a vaishya, distributing books. But the Brahmin preaches. So so we weren't going with our culture, and we were not straightforward with how we were getting donations. So it wasn't a brahminical way of doing things. And Prabhupada didn't like it. So you can see in your own life, and we can see in the history of ISKCON, that culture is very important. Has Sureshvar come here and done his Our Founder Acharya? So one of the things in his Our Founder Acharya course is that he recognized that when Prabhupada left, we didn't understand what a founder acharya is. We didn't know that culture. And so Prabhupada's disciples were kind of elevated to a point of almost their own founder acharyas, because we didn't understand that there is a culture of founder acharya. You have Ramanuja. He's the founder acharya of that sampradaya. The culture of founder acharya is a culture where one acharya reigns supreme, and everything that you understand must go through the filter of that acharya. That's how you understand it. He, Dhamma, and everybody serves that acharya. But it didn't happen that way when Prabhupada left, because we didn't understand the culture. And then one devotee who had lived in India and studied the Gaudiya Math, he had to write a letter and said, what you're doing is not the proper culture. It's not, because the gurus at that time were pretty much being worshipped like Prabhupada. And he had to write a letter and say, that's not the culture. We didn't know the culture. Because the culture, no, the guru, he sits down here, not up here. Even at Gaudiya Math, they sit lower than this. They just sit on a little cushion. So we didn't understand the culture. So we come, you know, we're the rock, we come in with a rock and roll culture, you know, worship the rock stars. So the gurus were like, you know, they were now the rock stars, and all the God brothers had to become the groupies. Not just the disciples, the God brothers. That was the culture. So we're bringing in the wrong culture because we didn't know. So it's important to understand philosophy in context of culture. And sometimes you're upset with another devotee. How do you deal with it? There's a culture and how to deal with it. You may be angry, but what's the culture? And it's so many times I see in lives of devotees, we get very upset, we get very angry. And a lot of that could be subjugated if we understood culture. How to deal with people. Culture is about relationships. So, these demigods, they're on a higher level, but they're not God. They don't have God's culture. And so she can see that. So we should stop. Is there any questions? Yes.